Okay, we continue in the Gemara Kiddushin, Chav Tes Amid Beis, 29b. We're discussing the mitzvahs that a parent has to ensure that their child is taking care of himself Jewishly. And we've talked about two of them. Fathers, and it's an obligation on the father and not on the mother. One, to circumcise the child. And number two, to redeem the child if he's a firstborn. So now, yesterday we discussed the issue if the father has to redeem himself versus his son redeeming himself, redeeming the son for him, who takes precedence. We discussed that yesterday. Now we discuss a different shaila of priorities as well. Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis taught in the Braisa. What if Liftos es Beno, he just had a firstborn son and he has to redeem the son, and that cost 5 shekels, 5 silver coins. But also he has a mitzvah, v'la'alos l'regel. He has a mitzvah to journey to Jerusalem. There's a mitzvah that you have to go to Jerusalem 3 times a year. Okay. Now, it costs money to go there. There's different expenses, traveling expenses, and more importantly, there's korbanos that have to be brought. Olas re'iyah, a burnt offering. When you see Hashem in the temple, you have to bring a burnt offering and a shalmei chagiga and peace offerings, holiday offerings. So that's expenses. And he has the expense of the 5 coins for his son. And the question is, a debate amongst the rabbis, what exactly is the order? There's a question, what's the shaila here? Is the shaila you only have enough money to do one? Or which one do you do first? That's the shaila we're going to see. But the Gemara says the following priorities. Poda es beno, the law is you first redeem your son. V'yacher kach ola l'regel, then you make the journey for the festival. All right, that's that opinion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says no. Ola l'regel, you go and journey up to Yerushalayim. V'yacher kach poda es beno, then he should redeem his son. So the simple meaning is you only have enough money to do one. So go up to Yerushalayim, spend your money doing what you have to do that mitzvah. When you accumulate more money, then you can go and redeem your son. Okay, that's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. What's the opinion? The first opinion says, no, you first got to redeem your child. So now what do you do? Well, the way the Rosh Hash learns is, you go, it's not that expensive to go to Yerushalayim, because what are you taking? You're taking your donkey anyway. You have to feed your donkey no matter where you go. I don't think they took hotel rooms necessarily. Yeah, if you watch all those westerns, you know, they would just sleep out on the open spaces. So, you know, but the expense is the animal, right? So that's the issue. So you just spend the money you have to redeem your child. Go to Yerushalayim. And you gotta hope that maybe you'll be able to borrow some money or whatever. But you gotta make sure that the mitzvah of redeeming the child comes first. Now what's the logic over here with Rabbi Yehuda though? That, let's go back now. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you go and make, go to Yerushalayim, and then you redeem your son. What's his logic? Gemara explains, Shizu mitzvah overes, that the mitzvah of going to Yerushalayim is a mitzvah that will pass in time. In other words, you gotta be there for Pesach. If you don't go now, you're going to miss it. And you can't make it up. You can't make up the mitzvah of being there for Pesach. On the other hand, Vezu, the mitzvah of redeeming your son, even though it should be done on the 30th day, but it still can be performed later. So Vezu mitzvah she'en overes. This is a mitzvah that does not pass by, and it can always be done at a later date. So therefore, do the mitzvah you can do first. That seems to be a fairly logical reason. So, yeah.
But supposing now Pesach is in 32 days from the time the son was born. So now you've got the other one coming first, and you only have enough money to do one. So should you not do then first, because
why?
30 days hits before.
Yeah, yeah, but still,
you know, in 2 days you're not going to get enough money to go. So now,
how do you lose?
So therefore, he's saying you go to Yerushalayim. You only have enough money to do.
He's saying you go to Yerushalayim, but you can always do the redemption later.
Right. You still can.
But you're obligated once the 30-day hits. Aren't you obligated?
You are, but if you don't,
you're not obligated to go to Jerusalem for another week.
No, you're obligated to go to Yerushalayim in the time that it is to be there on time. You know, even 90 days before. You know you got Yerushalayim on the first day of Erev Pesach, let's say. You got to be there. So it's not like the obligation starts on Erev Pesach. The obligation starts in the time it takes to get there. So you know you got these two mitzvahs that are in very close proximity. Obviously, we're not talking about where you had a baby 3 months before Pesach. You're going to say, well, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to spend the money now. I won't have 2 months or not. They're in close enough proximity that you only have enough money to spend on one. So even though going to Yerushalayim will mean I will not redeem my son on the 30th day that's coming 2 days before being in Yerushalayim, but at least I will perform the mitzvah of being in Yerushalayim, and Pidyon HaBen, I'll do it at a later time. I can still do it later. That's the point. You can always, it's not optimal, but here's the choice. Either, if I don't go to Yerushalayim for Pesach, I will never do the mitzvah of being in Yerushalayim in the year 5774. That's a mitzvah I have to do 3 times a year of 120 years of my life. So, even though it's a mitzvah that we would often, versus Pidyon HaBen, it's once, but still, if I do the Pidyon HaBen even a year from now, I've done the mitzvah. So this way I don't lose out on any mitzvah. Better to do both mitzvahs with one of them being delayed than to do one mitzvah 100% properly and the other mitzvah is not done at all. That's the logic of Rabbi Yehuda.
But the concept when you have two mitzvahs, you should do the whatever comes to your hand first and then you're not obligated.
But they're both kind of both coming to your hands first. That's the idea. I mean, you know they're coming pretty much at the same time. That's the idea. And so therefore, which one, you can only do one. So that's all very good. This is all good according to Rabbi Yehuda, Kamar Taima, like he gave the reason that better to do both mitzvahs at least, even though you've delayed one, and not to let one pass by. The real problem is the Rabban in the first opinion, who says, redeem the son and don't go to Yerushalayim. How do we explain this? Elul Rabbanah, but according to the rabbis, my Tamaya, what's the reason? Why should they rule the redemption comes first? So here he has an interesting pasuk. The Omar Kra, because if we look at the pasuk of going to Yerushalayim and redeeming your son, which is coming in a few weeks, let's take a look in Shmos Lamed Dalid. Shmos Lamed Dalid. Verse 20. Interesting pasuk. Okay, we're talking about the holiday of Pesach. It's like a whole bunch of things. It says you shouldn't make foreign idols. You should celebrate Pesach for 7 days. Then it talks redeeming firstborns. And the pasuk of it says, look carefully now. Ufeter chamor tifte is a whole slew of mitzvahs, right? A whole slew of mitzvahs. You know, again, from 18, the feast, you have to keep the holiday of Pesach. Okay. Then everything that comes firstborn, you have to redeem. But look carefully in Pasuk Chaf here. Ufeter chamor tifte b'seh, the firstling of a donkey or of a sheep, you'll redeem with a lamb. Vimlo tiftem, if you don't redeem it, you break its neck. But now we're talking about a child. Now, kol bechor banecha, all the firstborns of your sons, tifte, you shall redeem. Now look at the next 4 words. Where is this coming from? Velo yera ufanai rikam, and you shall not appear before me empty. What is that talking about?
Going to
Yerushalayim.
You will be empty.
but what's it throwing in this holiday? What's it saying before you shouldn't? You know, what does it say? You shouldn't see my face empty. It means you should have to go up to Yerushalayim. Right, but what is it saying you got to do before you go to Yerushalayim? You have to redeem your son. So why is it stick? I mean, it's very, the positioning is very unusual. What am I mixing in? You know, going up to Yerushalayim and redeeming my son. So that's what Gemara is going to say. The pasuk says, "Kol b'chor b'necha tivta," which we just read, the hadar, and then right afterwards it says, "Lo yeru panai rekam," you shall not see my face empty-handed. So since the first part of the pasuk deals with the mitzvah of redeeming the firstborn, and the latter one says to travel to Jerusalem, we have to assume the Torah is giving us the priority here. Okay, now let's look at the notes. In the simple meaning of scripture, the second part of the verse has no connection to the concept of redemption. It represents an entirely separate idea that when Jews travel to the temple for a festival, it shall not appear empty-handed, but must rather bring an offering while they are there. So why are you throwing that in into a pasuk talking about redeeming your son? Must be it's telling us that redemption takes priority, even if it means not going to Jerusalem, or at least you go to Jerusalem, and you just hope you'll be able to borrow. And if you can, you can. And if you can't, you can't. I'm not saying not to go to Yerushalayim. It was not considered an expensive thing. Now that would be an expensive thing. But you have to be in hotels and all this. But in those days, that wasn't the expense. The expense was the korbanos. So therefore, the conclusion is, according to that opinion, you go to Yerushalayim, you do this, the redemption, and then you go to Yerushalayim, and hopefully you can borrow the money. So that's a machlokas that the Gemara does not resolve. Okay, now, a new point. We're talking about redeeming a firstborn son. Okay, what if a man marries five women? So according to Torah law, he can have more than one wife. He marries five women. Each woman gives birth to a son. So how many sons must he redeem? One or five? Okay, one was born, let's say he married five ladies, and one was born in 2014, one was 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19. So you're saying how many?
One.
You say one.
I say one.
You say one.
It's firstborn son.
Firstborn son. And what?
First that opens the womb.
Okay, so now let's see, the Gemara's gonna tell us. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara says, Minayin, how do we know? If he had five firstborn sons from each woman it's her first son. And so he has from five sons from five women. The law is Shechayev Livtoskum. You have to redeem all five. That is the law. We only want to know, where do we know it from? Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says the following. Kol Bechor Banecha Tifte. All the firstborns, all. It could have said b'chor b'necha. Yeah. The first one, why did it say all? You shall redeem. Right? That means all, even if it's the second to the father, but it's all a firstborn. Gemara says, and that seems to be the proof from the word call. Now Shelley said something else as a reason. Gemara is saying something different than what Shelley said. Gemara says all firstborn. It seems from that word all we know. Gemara says, wait a minute, why did I have to come on to that? There's a more obvious reason, the one that Shelley thought of. Pshita, but isn't that, that's obvious that this so without that pasuk, because bepeter rechem tola rachmona. The Torah made it dependent on the peter rechem, the opening of the womb. Let's go back to the pasuk that we just looked at. And it says the following. Go back to Pasuk Yud Tes. Look what it says. Kol peter rechem. It's fancy English words here. All that opens the matrix is mine. What does that mean? Those who open up the womb. It's a law of opening up a womb. And only a woman's got a womb. So it means whenever a womb, a child comes out and that opens up the womb, that's the obligation. So it's clear that that's the obligation. It depends on the woman. It has something to do with the man. So every time a woman gives birth to a baby boy first, That is the law of Peter Rechem, opening up the womb and therefore the mitzvah. So why do I have to come to the Pasuk Kol that says all the firstborns? I don't need all the firstborns. It's just the Peter Rechem. We have five cases of Peter Rechem, five cases of the wombs opening up.
What if the woman was married before and had a firstborn before?
Well, that's it. That's it. It's her firstborn. She can't have more than one firstborn, no matter how many husbands she has.
What happens if it's a C-section?
That's not. Then you don't. And if it's a girl, you don't. And if there's a miscarriage, you don't. And if she's the daughter of a Kohen and Levi, you don't. So therefore, it's not a very common mitzvah.
She's a daughter of a
Kohen or a Levi, not, because there's no redemption necessary.
Mm-hmm. We learned from Pesach night that there's more than one firstborn. Because many died, you didn't know who the parents were, because they were...
That's what I was going to just say. This week's parsha, right?
Because...
Well, that's different. That's not the real law of firstborn. Firstborn, and there's Peter Rechems. The Torah is saying here specifically a Peter Rechem. The first one that comes out of the womb. In Mitzrayim was a different law. It was a different Bechor. That's all. It was a different Bechor.
I thought it's because the husband had more...
It wasn't a law of Peter Rechem.
It wasn't?
No.
Okay. It was a firstborn, and it could have been... That's why one woman could have had five firstborns. Because five firstborn mean the firstborn to the father's side. It was not a law of Peter Rechem of opening the womb.
Gotcha.
So the Gemara is asking, if it depends on Peter Rechem, on the opening of the womb, now I know why a man with five wives gives. What do I need the word call? All. What do I need the word all firstborns? I know from the fact that these are Peter Rechems. These have opened up the wombs. So Gemara answers, Mahu to say, Ma'ai Mainan thought that perhaps Nalef Bechor Menachala would make a comparison between Bechors. There's two mitzvahs in the Torah, two separate mitzvahs that deal with the concept of a firstborn son. On the one end, we have the firstborn son who's born must be redeemed. That's one law. There's another law that a firstborn son gets a double portion of the inheritance. If the firstborn is a firstborn of an inheritance, right? So we've got two of those. So I might have thought that there'd be a comparison between the two of them. So now let's think about this for a minute. Let's say a man, again, has five wives. Okay? Each wife gave birth to a firstborn son, and let's make it simple, and the man was blessed with only those five sons. No more kids. Okay, now, he dies. Who inherits the five boys? Now, we know there's a halacha that the bechor, the firstborn, gets a double portion. Now, who's going to get a double portion here? The law is, his first son gets the double portion. That is the law. Even though he may have five peterechems, five sons, that each one's the firstborn to the wives, but when we're talking about inheritance is totally dependent on the father. So we look at the father. The father has a bechor, a firstborn son. Remember, let's get this straight, okay? In Judaism, first of all, you're not going to like this, but only sons inherit, daughters don't. What do you do nowadays? That's an interesting shiloh. But what do you do with our daughters? But according to Torah law, because the daughter gets married to the husband has to take care of her. So, you know, there's no financial responsibility. That's the Torah.
She's not married.
What?
What if the daughter doesn't marry?
Well, then the ksuva has to take care of her. Then the married sons have to, just like, who takes care of the widow? Who takes care of a widow? A widow doesn't inherit.
No, he's asking an unmarried
daughter. I'm explaining. A widow doesn't inherit. So what does she get? The sons who inherit the money have an obligation, contractual, through the ksuva to support the mother. Similarly, they got to support their sister. So therefore, people say it's not fair to the women. It's very fair. They don't have to worry about anything. If the father doesn't leave much money, the sons now carry a tremendous responsibility to support the mother, support the kids. They could lose a lot of money. So the women's women, they don't know what they're talking about when they use this as a thing. Oh, see, we can't inherit. You're lucky. The sons will have to go knocking door to door begging, if necessary, to provide for their mother and sisters, while the mothers and sisters sit pretty in the house, as Jewish women should. Okay. So anyway, so we've limited inheritance only to sons. In within the inheritance of the sons, the firstborn son gets a double portion. So now the man had five wives, five sons. Who gets a double portion? His first son from the wife who gave him a son first. What about the other four boys? Forget it. They're regular guys. So now we have two laws of Bechor. So we might have linked, we might have thought to link the laws of redemption of firstborn sons to the laws of inheritance of a firstborn son. And what would I have thought? Malahalan, just like by a firstborn son. What does the Torah say? The Torah goes out of its way and uses the word, it says, reishis ono, the first of his strength. Let's take a look at that pasuk. It's in Dvarim Chaf Aleph Yud Zayin. Here, it shall be when he makes his sons inherit that which he has, that he not, remember it's a man who has two wives. He doesn't like one wife. That's when he have the Ben Sorimor. Now it comes, he has two wives and two sons. He may not make the son of the beloved firstborn before the son of the hated, who is indeed the firstborn. Now look what he says. But he shall acknowledge the son of the hated for the firstborn by giving him a double portion of all that he has. Here's the clincher now. Ki hu reishis ono, for he is the beginning of his strength. What does that mean, the beginning of his strength? It's the first issue of his seed. So that clearly, what do we see by inheritance? That the one that comes the first issue of his seed, that's a boy, that's the one who's the Bechor, notwithstanding the fact that a second wife has a firstborn son from, that comes out of her womb. So inheritance depends on the first son that comes out of him. So I might have thought, just like by inheritance, when it's a firstborn son, it's a firstborn from him, so I would think, Afkan, we would associate that when it comes to redeeming a son, yes, he must be a one that is comes out of the womb, but maybe only the first one that comes out of the womb. In other words, the Torah says, a peter rechem, a one that comes out of the womb, you got to redeem. So I might have thought, well, I'll make a comparison. Just like by inheritance, I only allow the firstborn son that's issued from the husband, who is also obviously a pet derechem, but only one inherits, I would think you only have to redeem one. Comes the Torah by Pidyon HaBen and says, call every first peterechem, every opening of the womb, even if it comes from a second wife. That's why I need kol. It wasn't good enough to say that it came out of the womb, because it's five came out of the womb, because by inheritance, it doesn't matter if it comes out of a womb, it has to be his first son. So I would think you only redeem his first son that came first out of the first wife's womb. That would be a reasonable drasha to make. Comes the word kol and says, we don't make that drasha. Rather, every first one that comes out of a womb, no matter how many kids it is of his, has to all be redeemed. That's why we need the word kol. Yeah?
I still think you could say, you don't need to say kol, because Torah clearly says peterechem.
Fine.
When it comes to redemption. It clearly says the father's first strength, the beginning of the father.
But they're both
so,
before.
So it's clear that peterechem would be for each wife.
Well, first of all, every bechor by inheritance is also peterechem, isn't it?
No, but it says the father. It says,
I understand.
It's relative to the father for inheritance, and it's clear it's relative to the mother for redemption. So you don't really need to say
not that. Necessarily, because whenever you have...
What could it be?
It could be, when we have two halachas, and you have Bechor and Bechor, there is license to say there's similarities in halacha. There's license to say that.
And you have...
Maybe only the first peterechem. It doesn't say every peterechem. If it doesn't, it says a peterechem, you do. Now we'll say, this is a law of a Bechor. This is a Bechor. It says you have to redeem a Bechor. right? That's clearly, it says also, they're called Bechors. Why call him a Bechor? Just call him a Petarechem. Since he calls him a Bechor, that gives us license to say that, I mean, we're dealing with Bechor, should have a similar law to other Bechors. Even though it's a Petarechem, alright, it's a Petarechem, but it doesn't mean that's the only requirement. Because we call him a Bechor. Let's not call him a Bechor. If, I would say like this, if the Torah doesn't call him a Bechor, and just says, when you have a Petarechem, you redeem it, then I'd hear your case. But the Torah bothers to call him a Bechor as well. So why is it calling him a Bechor? Once you call him a Bechor, that gives me license to say he's like other Bechors. That I might think that way, and that wouldn't be unreasonable, because now I know by inheritance, you know, it has a law of Bechor, which is also a Petarechem, but we go with the first, maybe the Torah is teaching us the first issue by the father, and also the first issue when it comes to redemption. That's why I need to say Bechor, Bechol, to not make that confusion. Kamash Malan. Therefore, we have the word kol, that the son is redeemed if only, even if he's only the firstborn of the mother, not from the father, so we don't make that mistake in drasha. Okay, let's do one little more piece here. The next obligation that a father has to a son is to teach him Torah. Okay, that's the next obligation. How do I know from the Torah? What's the source that a father is responsible to teach his son Torah? That's the next of the five cases that we have to deal with. Lalam de Torah. Gemara says, Minolon, how do I know this? What's the Torah source to this? It says, Dichsiv, it says, and you should be a familiar verse, Velimadetem osam es b'neichem. Devarim yud aleph yutes. Does it sound familiar, guys?
Yep.
It is part of what? Well, not exactly. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. Vayom Shema. Yeah, it's the second chapter of the Shema. The second chapter of the Shema says, V'limatem osam espenechem. You shall teach them. What are you teaching them? We're talking about keeping the Torah. Look at the pasuk before. V'samtem es divarayela. Therefore lay upon these words upon your heart. I mean the words of the Torah. You gotta learn the Torah. And in pasuk 19 it says, V'limatem espenechem l'daberbam. You have to teach your children speaking of them when you sit in the house, etc., etc. So there it is. There's an obligation for you to teach your sons. Clearly, it's a mitzvah of the Torah to teach your sons. Okay, but we don't know, maybe that applies to the mother too. Right? It just says a parent has to teach a child. It didn't say it's a father. It says, Limatam, and you shall teach your sons. So, let's see what happens. Limatam esam es b'neichem, you will teach your sons. Period. Next point. V'heichad alagmer, but what if the father doesn't teach him? Whatever it is, your father didn't teach you Torah. Now, you're already a 13-year-old boy. Now, he has to teach himself. How do I know that? Dichsiv. Now again, it's a different verse. That's in Deuteronomy 5. And that's with what it says, Ulamatem. You shall study them. Let's look at that verse. That's Devarim 5:1. Moshe calls over the Jewish people. He says, Shema Yisrael, Sachukim, Vesen Shvatim. Listen to these statutes and laws that I'm giving over to your ears. Ulamatem osam. And you shall learn them. It's not a question. You shall teach them. You shall learn them. So if no one taught you, then you should learn it. So that's a separate verse. Clearly, you have to learn them. So if your father teaches them to you, then that's good. That was the first pasuk. The father should teach a son. But here, you shall learn them. So okay, so your father didn't teach you. You have to learn yourself. Fine. So now, so far we know a parent has to teach a child, and a child has to teach himself, the parent teach him. But the question that our Brisa said, the father only has the obligation and not the mother. So where do we see that from? Ihi minolan deloma chayva. I don't know that she is not responsible to teach him. Why is it only he? Right? So let's go back to that pasuk. Remember we had a similar idea by Pidyon HaBen. Dichsiv, let's look at how the way the word is written and how the word can be read. We said that word before was velimaditem, right? Now, velimaditem was written without a yud, and therefore it can be read also ulimatem, and you shall study. The word is velimatem, you shall teach. That's the way we read it, okay? But if it's read that way, really, it should have been lamed yud to say veli, but it doesn't say lamed yud, it says lamed mem, which could be read, it's written in a way that could be read ulematem. You see the double possible meaning there? If you only meant velimatem, you'd write lamed yud, and then it could only be limatem, you will teach him. The fact they wrote it without a yud, even though we say limatem, but it's written ulematem, that means you shall study. So there's a double meaning over there, right? So therefore, since there's two ways of reading it, we apply a combination to both. Kol shemitzvah l'ilmod, whoever's commanded to study, then mitzvah l'lamed, he also has a mitzvah to teach them that. Okay, whoever has the mitzvah to study has the mitzvah to teach, because it's a double meaning. You shall learn, you shall teach. Whoever has to learn, he shall teach. V'chol she'ein mitzav l'ilmod, whoever is not commanded to learn, ein mitzav l'ilmod, doesn't have to teach. So therefore a woman who doesn't have to learn doesn't have to teach. Which Gemara says, well wait a minute, how do you know a woman doesn't have to learn? How do you know that? V'im in olam d'lamachai v'lamelev nafshe, how do we know that she doesn't have to learn herself? So we now use the same double meaning to go on one more step. Again, they have the double expression over here. And there's a third point. If it's you shall teach, it also means what? It means you shall teach, you shall study. Means there's those who have to teach somebody and those who have to learn. Right? Now obviously, there's someone who is being taught. So there's three things. There's learning, teaching, and being taught. So now we need someone who's being taught. So we have the rule, kol shacheri mitzvah l'lamdo, whoever is, others are obliged to teach him, if others are obliged to teach him, then it's a mitzvah l'lamed, then it's a commandment to teach himself. If others have to teach you, then you have to teach yourself. But if, but if others are not obliged to teach him, he doesn't have to teach himself. And we're not obliged to teach women either. Since we're not obliged to teach them, they don't have to learn themselves and then they don't teach others. It's a three-step process. I only have to teach others if I have to learn myself, and I only have to learn myself if others have to teach me. How do I know? Finally, how do others aren't obliged to teach girls? How do you know we don't have to teach your daughters? Summer Krah, look what it says. You will teach it to your sons. Not your daughters. So it's the three steps. The Torah says you shall teach it to your sons. Meaning it's all missing to teach your son. Now the double expression, limaditem, ulamaditem, which means you will teach, you will learn, only those that I have to teach, those have the obligation to learn. And then we also said those who have to, don't have to learn, don't have to teach. So since we're not obliged to teach our daughters, therefore they're not obliged to learn. If they're not obliged to learn, then they're not obliged to teach others as well. And we've gone full circle that that's why they don't have to teach their sons. Tomorrow we'll discuss again, what if there's only enough money for you to either teach yourself or to teach your son? That becomes tomorrow's discussion.